Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw from Madison Square Garden, the go-home show, to this week's big Clash of Champions event at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, WWE returns to Madison Square Garden last night after a very, very, very lengthy absence. And they do so with Stone Cold Steve Austin kicking off the show for what is going to be him moderating the contract signing between Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman. That was interrupted last week by the OC. Steve Austin comes out and he gets a huge pop. I mean, here's the problem that perhaps the WWE doesn't realize. When Steve Austin gets that kind of a pop after how many years gone, the fans are sending you a clear signal. And the signal isn't just we missed him. It's great to see him again. They're sending you a signal that they want those type of characters again. They want that type of entertainment again. You're not giving it to them. But anyway, Steve Austin comes out. Not going to lie, he had me a little worried there for a while he's going down memory lane saying, let me tell you about this memory, let me tell you about that memory. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's not sound like an old man on your rocking chair saying, well, I was a kid. You know, so I was like, yeah, let's keep that to a minimum. Fortunately, he did. He cut it kind of short, and we get the contract signing, which is very, goes off without incident as far as Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman are concerned. They both say the same thing. Well, I respect the other person, but I'm going to be the champion, and we're going to keep the tag team championships. This is once again interrupted by the OC. And once again, AJ Styles does actually a pretty good job. AJ Styles has been doing a much better job on the microphone lately. And he came down and kind of gave Steve Austin the business saying, we don't want to get you riled up, so you're running around saying you're going to stomp a mud hole in somebody's ass and walk it dry and open up a can of whoop ass and all that stuff. Don't need to do that. He pled his case to Steve Austin about how does this idiot get a title shot. He looks at the belt and gets a title shot. Austin moves the table. And the next thing you know, there's an attack. Now, Austin's not part of it. It's basically just Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman who attack AJ and Gallows and Anderson. But still, he manages, because AJ Styles avoids Seth Rollins' curb stomp, throws Seth Rollins out of the ring, and while he's bragging on that, backs into Steve Austin, who gives him a stunner, which I hope everybody is watching very carefully, because AJ Styles sold the stunner correctly, which is he didn't take it, roll out of the ring, and walk back to the dressing room holding his neck. He didn't take it, fall out of the ring, land on his feet, and walk away. He laid there like you shot him with a Magnum, 357 Magnum. And I guarantee you, when Steve Austin is down on his hands and knees, jaw-jacking in AJ Styles' face, he's probably telling him thank you. Because he really, really did sell it. It was an okay segment. It was great to see Steve Austin. It was fitting that he was at Raw in Madison Square Garden. Fans enjoyed it very, very much. And it's an okay opening. I don't really have a problem with the opening. If anything, I guess the only thing I do have a problem with is we're in a situation where I don't see any real momentum for Seth Rollins versus Braun Strowman. I just don't. And I don't really see any momentum for Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman defending the belts against Roode and Dolph Ziggler either. And the fact that it's always got to be the OC that comes down and interrupts his contract signing, it's almost like they're overlooking everybody else. But we'll get to that in a short period of time because I know exactly where this tag team division is going. But I believe, Tom, you were there live last night, correct? So what was the reaction to Stone Cold Steve Austin that we may not have heard on television? I guess we don't have him there. I thought we had Tom up. But anyway, pretty good reception there, I think, for Stone Cold, Mike.
Right. It really was a pretty good reception. And I'll say this again, and you said it before about AJ Styles. He is the best professional wrestler, not just in the WWE, in the world. I mean, and that's not just him in the ring. That's him, everything all wrapped up in one. He is the best professional wrestler in the world today.
I have to agree with it. I really do, because he does the most. He makes the most. Is he the best guy on the mic? No. Is he the very best ring technician? Probably not. Is he the biggest draw? Probably not. But if you combine everything together and take the average score of everything that AJ Styles is, he's still going to come out ahead of everybody else. Because there's some guys who are big draws, but they're way, way, way worse in the ring. Or there are some guys who are better in the ring, but they way worse on the draw side. Or there's guys who are better on the microphone, but they can't wrestle. There's so much that AJ Styles does right. And it's the little things, too, sometimes, like selling that stunner. There wouldn't have been a single person, including Stone Cold Steve Austin, who would have been upset if AJ Styles rolled out of the ring after the stunner, on his knees, held his neck, and walked back to the dressing room. But that's not what AJ Styles did. AJ Styles sold that thing with the utmost respect, saying, if I'm hit with that out of nowhere, I should sell it like I'm done, like I'm unconscious. And I hope some of the younger wrestlers take note. I really do, because this is a lost art of selling someone else's moves and putting someone else over. It's all about getting yourself over lately, and it's frustrating when you're a fan and you watch that week after week after week after week. Anyway, Todd, good to see Stone Cold Steve Austin. I thought it was an okay opening segment.
It was a pretty cool opening segment right there with Stone Cold Steve Austin, Braun Strowman, and Seth Rollins in the club. And like you said, when AJ Styles took that sign, he took it like a professional. Like, he sold it pretty good. And by the looks of it, looked like Stone Cold looked like he was in pretty good shape last night. And
yeah, he really did.
Before.
Yeah, he looked good. He definitely looked good. Anyway, so AJ has to kind of hang around in the ring anyway. I know some people are going to say, well, the reason AJ didn't leave is he had to come right back into the ring. Yeah, but listen, AJ could have fell outside the ring and been standing there waiting for his match. He didn't have to lay there like he was dead. He finally pulled himself into a corner. He didn't really even stand up. For Cedric Alexander, now, this is the frustrating thing. This is a great match. But the frustrating thing to me is you've waited until the go-home show of a pay-per-view that says every title has to be defended. So we already know that AJ Styles' title is included in that, and he has no opponent as of 8 o'clock last night. So did anyone think in their wildest dreams that his opponent would not be Cedric Alexander? So we already knew, it's a foregone conclusion, that Cedric Alexander is winning this match in some way, shape, or form. Now, they tried to throw a swerve on us by saying, well, he's not going to pin AJ Styles yet. AJ is going to get disqualified when the rest of the OC jump in and beat down Cedric Alexander. Okay, well, he still wins, though. It's still the same thing. We already knew from the moment this match was announced that's going to be AJ's opponent, which means AJ is now winning. But to our surprise, here come the Viking Raiders to help them. What in the hell is going on there? You have spent countless weeks building up the Viking Raiders as his indestructible force. And they were definitely healing it up until last week anyway. Definitely healing it up. Who could stop them? Nobody can stop them. They're invincible monsters. And then we're going to come running down to help our buddy, Cedric Alexander. And later we're going to be in a tag team match with our other buddies, Seth Rollins, Braun Strowman, and Cedric Alexander. I know that the WWE does not think the Viking Raiders went over, but it doesn't matter whether they're heels or faces. They didn't go over not because they were heels. They didn't go over because you used them wrong. So now to just say, well, we'll try to make them faces and maybe that'll help. It's not going to help unless you use them correctly, which I suspect you're going to do. Not to jump ahead, but let's face it. We know what's happening. Braun Strowman and Seth Rollins are not holding on to the tag team belts. Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode are transitional champions. How do we get the belt off them? How do we get the belt off of Dolph and Roode to get it to the Viking Raiders? Easy, this way. Viking Raiders will be the champions, and their number one nemesis, of course, will be the OC. And that will be the main feud. So we see where this is going. It's really obvious booking. We put them on Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman. That's very temporary. Just to get them, because we don't want the Viking Raiders to beat them, because we want them to be faces. So what heel team can beat them? Well, we don't really have one. We don't want the OC to do it. So, okay, it's going to have to be Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler, and they'll have it a week, 2 weeks. First major event, Viking Raiders are going to get it. And then the war between them and the OC will start. That's the way it's going to go. You can mark your calendars for that. But anyway, we're told there's going to be a 10-man tag team match later, which is going to include the Viking Raiders and Cedric Alexander and the tag team champion Seth Rollins and Braun Strowman against AJ Styles and the OC and Dolph Ziggler and Roode. That's going to be your main event. That's okay. That's fine. We're also told, which is miraculous, that Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair are going to team up. And they're going to take on Sasha Banks and Bayley. And I don't know. I mean, listen, Mike, I don't know if it's a mistake to turn the Viking Raiders faces. I do think they lose a little of their mystique when they're reaching their hands out saying, make the tag to, you know, their buddy Seth Rollins.
I think so, too. But again, we know where this is headed. We know what feud they want with this. And we know that at some point, they're going to put those belts back on the OC. We know that. We know it's coming. You know, so I'm like you said, I'm sort of all for this because we know where it's going.
We do, but the reason I'm not all for it, I suppose, is because it's too obvious. In other words, the odd men out are Dolph Ziggler and Roode, who are just being used. They're being used because, well, we don't have anybody else, so we'll just do this and get the belts where we want them. And they're going to be forgotten after this. That's the problem. They'll probably be forgotten after this. If you want the belts on the Viking Raiders, I don't have a problem with that. If you want the belts on the OC, I don't have a problem with that. I just don't understand. If you're going to have Seth Rollins fight Braun Strowman, then why can't you just have two heels fight two heels? Why can't you have two face teams fight two face teams? What's the problem? Just to take Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode and use them for 20 minutes, their 20 minutes of fame, and then goodbye. I don't like it. And I don't like it when it's that predictable. I don't like it when things are that predictable. Now, maybe the OC will get it ahead of the Viking Raiders, but I doubt it. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see the tag team championship change hands at Clash of Champions, and then the Viking Raiders will get it immediately, and then the OC will feud with the Viking Raiders and probably get it back at some point. So, I mean, that's what it is. It is what it is. I call it really super obvious booking, and I've never been a fan of that. I think there are ways you can get to what you want to do and not totally blueprint it. Anyway, the next matchup is Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair against Bayley and Sasha Banks. And the thing that drives me crazy about this is Corey Graves has now totally done a 180, and I should say a 360, shouldn't I? And what he's saying is, before, Sasha is a user. She's just using Bayley. All she's doing is using Bayley. She's a user. It's all about her. She's not really Bayley's friend. Now he's saying, no, no, this is loyalty like we've never seen before. And they may be the biggest force in the WWE. Sasha Banks and Bayley may be the biggest single force in the WWE, male or female. And this is a line he's told to say, because he says it three times. Could be the biggest force in the WWE, and the biggest force in the WWE loses first time they team up. Former tag team champions, best friends, the whole gimmick of being loyal and being the biggest, the toughest faction in the WWE, the biggest threat in the WWE, gets clean pinned by Charlotte Flair, who, her partner is Becky Lynch, who she's not even supposed to like. And they're not really even supposed to have worked well together. Would this not have been the time to let one of the two, Becky Lynch or Charlotte Flair, drop the match, even if it was by underhanded means? So Corey Graves could have drove home that point and said, look who they just beat. Arguably two of the top women ever in WWE history. Now tell me they're not the strongest faction in the WWE. Instead, he's made to eat his words. Keep saying they're the strongest faction, Corey. Okay, they're the strongest faction ever. Oops, they lost. Drives me crazy. I just don't understand that. I can't understand where they're going with that.
I can't understand it either, especially the fact that you look at those four women in the ring, and you, when you first see them in the ring, what do you think? You think, well, what I thought was, well, they're putting back together the four horsewomen.
Right.
You know, right. That's what you thought. That's what you think. And that's what you're made to think. And, I mean, again, with Charlotte Flair, you don't know what she is from week to week. Is she a heel? Is she a face? Is she a heel? Is she a face? Is she going to be on SmackDown, or is she going to be on Raw? Because they put a Raw girl and a SmackDown girl together. All right? Becky Lynch is the Raw champion. Charlotte Flair is on SmackDown. Am I not wrong?
Right.
So that's another reason why this match doesn't make sense. You could have very easily had you know, maybe Naomi in this match instead of Charlotte. I know what they were going for, but if you wanted to keep it, you know, that way, you could have absolutely had somebody else, maybe a Charlotte, maybe a Naomi in this match instead of Charlotte.
Well, yeah, you know what they're going for, of course, is that, oh, Charlotte Flair just pinned the champion. We get it. We get it. And then she's fighting her on you know, going to be fighting on Sunday, so we get it. But then don't call them the strongest faction ever. Can you imagine doing that? Can you imagine saying this is their first, they reunited for the first time, former tag team champions, Bayley and Sasha Banks. Bayley now the champion. Sasha Banks, the number one contender. And they were great before as tag team champions, and now they're even tougher because they got this whole new attitude. Oops, maybe they're not that tougher. They just lost their first time they teamed up. I think that's a mistake. And a big one. Anyway, we next get Rey Mysterio versus Lince Dorado. This was a great match. No doubt. I don't know why the match existed other than to just give Rey and Dorado a, or was it Grand Metal? I don't even remember who it was. But anyway, the bottom line is they had a great match. I think it was Lince Dorado. Great match. The problem is while the fans appreciated the great moves and the precision, and there were some really good things. There were some things that, for instance, the Rey Mysterio dive that was perfectly timed. Like I said, it's too often where people are standing there waiting to catch you. They don't do that. These guys knew each other's style very well, and they were right on. They were right on with each other. They were absolutely perfect timing. These guys pulled off a great match. But the fans weren't that into it because, well, you know who's going to win, number one. And number two, it doesn't really matter, does it? It was sort of a match that didn't matter. I was waiting for something important to happen. And it's a shame because when you have a really great match like that, you shouldn't be waiting for something else to happen. You should just be able to enjoy the match and say, no, this is a great match, which is what the WWE is shooting for. And I applaud them for shooting for that and giving him plenty of time and everything. But again, there's no sense of drama if you already know it's a foregone conclusion. Ray's not dropping this match. You've done nothing with the Lucha House Party, really, individually or together. So for Rey Mysterio to lose this match would have been a gimmick. I mean, I would have actually preferred it because then I would have said, well, something's up. Now Ray loses this match after his son has already told him, don't retire. You still got that, you know, special something. And he doesn't, obviously. And what's going to happen? That would have at least been more intriguing. This is just, okay, well, it is what it is. A great match, Todd, but one that we already kind of knew where it was going.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty good match. It reminds me of the Lucha on Lucha match, old school WCW cruiserweight match back in the day. It reminds me of Rey Mysterio back in the old cruiserweight division back then.
Yeah.
That match.
Yep. Yeah, me too. Me too. Anyway, it was what it was. We now get the King of the Ring semifinal match, which is now a triple threat match. Samoa Joe, Ricochet, and of course Baron Corbin. What surprised me that I wasn't expecting in this match, number one, this was a very, very strong match and one the crowd actually did care about. And Corbin is looking better, a lot better. But what surprised me is there were a decent amount of Madison Square Garden fans who were cheering for Baron Corbin. That really shocked me. And I thought about it, and I said, well, I guess the reason that they're doing this is, given the field that they currently have, which would just be Elias and Gable, and the guys that are in the ring now, who would make the most entertaining king? And the answer is Corbin. What's Ricochet going to do with a crown on his head? Say what? What's he going to say? He's going to come out every week and say, I'm King Ricochet. And then what? There's nothing to be gained. So the fans know that. New York fans are very smart, and they get it. King Elias, that's not going to work. King Gable, that's really, 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 really not going to work. King Joe might work, but Joe don't need that. And the fans don't want that. You know, I have to remember Harley Race when he was the king, and I say to myself, I'm glad he was there, and I'm glad he was earning a paycheck, and I'm glad he was entertaining the fans, but that was probably not what a guy like Harley Race wanted. It was a little bit too gimmicky for him. And I think the same thing with Joe. I think it's a little too gimmicky for Joe. Just let Joe be Joe. Corbin, on the other hand, he's the obvious choice. He's the obvious choice. And I think a good amount of Madison Square Garden fans last night realized, yeah, if you're going to give us this option of these five guys, then we'll pick Corbin. Now, there were fans chanting, no, we don't, when they were chanting, we want Corbin. Because still a lot of fans realize that, you know, Corbin is sort of a mid-card heel that it's not going anywhere. But again, I ask you, out of those five people, who's the guy that you're going to want to be King of the Ring, Mike?
Absolutely, you know, that's the thing. Now, when he went and sat on the crown, sat on the throne a few weeks back, and And generally, when somebody does that, you know, you're gonna say, well, yeah, all right, he's not winning, but like you say, where else are you gonna go? And look, he needs to thank Joe, because Joe, when he was punching on Joe, doing the kind of the boxing type punching, well, what do people say? Well, he's a Golden Glove boxer, you know.
Yeah.
Joe sold him as that Golden Gloves boxer, so Corbin needs to thank Joe for that.
Yeah, unfortunately, Joe has to take another loss. Wow, I mean, Joe is just, you know, he's the human pinning machine. He just put me in any kind of a 6-man, 10-man, 3-way, 4-way, I'll be the guy that gets pinned. And then every week I have to come out and say how nobody can touch me and I'm the toughest guy. And that's a hard, hard thing. I'm sorry, that's a hard thing to pull off. And you can only pull it off for so long before you fall into the old Bray Wyatt syndrome of how many times are you going to say that you're an unstoppable force and you get pinned. So Joe's career is in turmoil here. I imagine they're going to flip Joe face very, very, very soon and try to erase all those losses by freshening up his character. That's what I would assume. But Corbin steals a victory off of Ricochet's finisher, and it's pretty apropos for a guy like Corbin. It worked. And I think we're probably going to see Chad Gable overcome Elias, and I think we're probably going to see Corbin and Gable, which is going to be the typical big man against the little man. I don't think that's where I would have went with this tournament, Todd, but I guess it's the logical place from this vantage point now.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they're gonna have Corbin and Gable, the big man versus little man match at Night. Not one thing, Knights of Champions. I mean, Clash of Champions.
Clash of Champions. Yeah.
Well, you're gonna see that final match, that final King of the Ring match between those two, and you're gonna see Corbin be the ruler of Raw and SmackDown as king, and he's gonna make him kiss fans and the fellow wrestlers kiss his feet.
Yeah, I think King Corbin probably sounds about right. That's probably where it's going. We next get Lacey Evans against Natalya, and this is the only match of the night that really pissed me off. And the reason it pissed me off is I just don't know what the WWE is doing. Did I not see Lacey Evans in grand fashion beat Natalya last week? And it was a very cool victory, a very heelish victory, and one that I said on this radio show, this helps try to rebuild Lacey Evans. She looked better in that match. The ending was cool. Natalya sold that punch like $1 million. We're finally starting to rebuild Lacey Evans after her embarrassing losses for the past, I don't know how long. Well, you can scratch all that off, because that young upstart, that rookie who desperately needed the victory, Natalya, taps her out. So I don't know. I just don't know. The four girls you saw in the ring earlier in the night, that's it for the WWE. That's what they got. Everybody else is 50-50 at best. And no one's getting a build-up. No one is. So there you go, in a nutshell. Very upsetting to me, because I thought, okay, look, Natty's position in this company now is a girl who helps train these girls, helps put them over, helps get them in a position where they can actually achieve something. Not goes over on them all the time. And okay, so she went 50-50 with her, but why does Natty have to go 50-50 with anybody? Natty had her title shot. Natty had her moment in the sun. Can we now start building up some new stars? And you've already undermined Lacey Evans by having her lose to Becky Lynch countless numbers of times. Could we just get a little bit of a build-up for her again? Keep the momentum from a week ago? You didn't even let her build off that momentum. What's the point of even having this match then? See, this is what I call lazy booking. Somebody sits there and says, how about if we have Lacey Evans and Natalya, and Lacey wins? Next week, Natalya gets a rematch, and Natalya wins. That way we get 2 weeks out of this. Well, why does Natalya get a rematch when even when champions lose, they don't get a rematch now? That's the thing that gets me. You lose the championship, you don't automatically get a rematch. You lose a normal match, oh yeah, no problem, you get a rematch. What? I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. But if you are going to do it, for God's sake, at least keep the forward momentum going. Okay, let's say you want Lacey Evans not to win. You still want to build Natalya, then she should have won both times. Build somebody, because 50-50 booking isn't building nobody, Mike, and it doesn't help.
It really isn't building nobody, especially the fact that, look, we know what Natty is and what she's going to be probably for the remainder of her career. I mean, she's 30, she's in her late 30s. There's not very much she can do that she hasn't done. I mean, she's held the Divas champion. I think she's even held the women's champion at some one point, you know. So there's very little that she hasn't done except for the tag team champions, which she's not really a tag team wrestler, so throw that out. So, yeah, we know what she is. And look, I look at Lacey Evans. Her gimmick doesn't scream Southern Belle. Her gimmick screams she's something from the 1940s. You look at the how they got her tights or whatever they are. They look like the thing with the when the women would draw because of the rationing of the nylon,
yeah.
They would draw the thing on the back of the leg like they had things on. She doesn't scream Southern Belle. She screams something from out of the 1940s.
Yeah, you've hit that on the head. That's precisely right. She does remind me of that. She reminds me of the during the war who worked in the factories and things. And you know what she reminds me of? She reminds me of the femme fatale in some of those old private detective movies where, you know, the private detective would be sitting at his desk with a bottle of whiskey in his hand and some, you know, blonde would walk in and that would be Lacey Evans. Yeah, you've hit the nail right on the head. I'm having a little trouble with the phone, so bear with me. But, yeah, you're right. And it doesn't help anybody. Are you going to build Natty up to do what? Get another title shot against who? Sasha Banks? It doesn't make any sense. Please, can we keep Lacey Evans' momentum going, or don't give her the momentum? I don't care which. But if you're going to tell me this week we are going to have Shelton Benjamin win a match against whoever, then you're indicating to me, well, I guess Shelton Benjamin's getting a push. Next week he's going to fight that exact same guy and lose. Okay, well, then nobody gets a push. Then you're just wasting time. You're just putting us on a treadmill. You're just throwing out matches to throw out matches. But yeah, now that I got the phone lines together, Mike, that's what she reminds me of. She reminds me of the femme fatale in a private detective novel.
Right. I mean, there's a particular scene in Roger Rabbit when Jessica Rabbit shows up in that detective's office, and she says, "I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way." You know.
Right.
That's what she reminds me of. Now, granted.
Hold on, the phones are going nutso again. Let me get you back. Try it again. Go ahead, Mike.
And granted, you look at her and you watch her as a wrestler and you watch her as an athlete and you watch her do that moonsault and she seems to be a poor man Charlotte. You know?
Yeah, that's a good observation too. The problem with her is that she's never had any real momentum. And how in the world do you expect anybody to get behind a character that from her outset has had zero momentum? Zero. It just doesn't make any sense. You expect her to get over doing what? Going 50-50 for the rest of her life? So the Firefly Funhouse we should talk a little bit about because it was weird, which is good. I think what Bray Wyatt was saying in the Firefly Funhouse was, I suppose everybody expects me to attack Stone Cold Steve Austin, but that's not happening because you can't blame a rattlesnake for being a rattlesnake. I knew he wasn't going to attack Stone Cold Steve Austin. He had the perfect opportunity to do that before when Austin was in the ring during the big Raw reunion show. That didn't happen. I knew he wasn't going to this time. As far as the rest of this is concerned, I know they're not going the direction we hoped that they were going to go. I already can see it. Bray Wyatt's not getting in that ring as that character. I would have hoped that they would have pushed for that. But it doesn't seem like that's what they want. At least at this moment, that's not what they want. Maybe in the future they will. They're going to have to start doing some live Firefly Funhouses if they want this thing to work. Because the tape now is starting to get old and starting to wear off. And no matter how many times and how many clever things you can do, it's going to get old. Fans want to see him. You know, you show up at Madison Square Garden, you say, I saw Bray Wyatt on the Titantron. That's not the same thing as saying Bray Wyatt came to the ring or he did a live Firefly Funhouse on the stage. I think they're going to have to modify it. We'll see what ends up happening. He's very clearly indicating that they're going to be doing some kind of Hell in a Cell thing, and he's going to be fighting either Braun Strowman or Seth Rollins. Very clearly indicating that. And I worry. I'm so worried about this. Because if he wins, I just don't know where this goes with a championship around the Fiend's waist. I know where it's going to go. It's going to go to Finn Balor and the demon character coming back. And I think the WWE is making a huge mistake if they put the belt around his waist. That's all I'm going to say. Not because he's not a great character, because he doesn't need it. Simple as that. Never put the belt on somebody who really don't need it. Just to say, well, he's the most popular, so that's who we're going to go with. Well, if he's the most popular, we don't need it. And of course, we did the R-Truth thing. I'm not going to waste my time anymore talking about the 24/7 championship because it is dumb as dirt. If you enjoy this and don't think in any way, shape, or form this is mocking wrestling, and don't think I don't have a sense of humor. I love comedy wrestling. I love comedic stuff. But this is different than comedic stuff. This is just, he's a 15-time champion. And the belt's been, what, a month and a 2 months? Come on, folks. You really want to see this for another year? Because I don't. It was old a month ago. And now it's not only old, it's stale old. So we get the 10-man tag team match. Good match. Once again, I don't know if I want to see the Viking Raiders stretching their hands out going, tag me in, Seth, tag me in. You know, that seems, there goes the whole Viking thing down the shitter. But it is what it is. And sure enough, what ending do we get? Cedric Alexander pins AJ Styles. So we get that legitimate, hey, he's going to be the number one contender at Clash of Champions, which we all knew was coming. So all I can say about this show is this. The quality of the wrestling was very high. Really high. I thought every match, even Lacey Evans and Natty was a good match. It's just I don't understand the conclusion. All of the matches were good. They didn't have too many. They let this thing breathe a little bit. AJ Styles and Cedric Alexander went through a couple of commercial breaks. A couple of these matches did. So you actually felt like, wow, this is a good match. This isn't just, you know, show up 2 minutes later, you're gone. The quality of the matches last night was very high. The quality of the booking for these matches was mediocre to low. Because at the end of the day, let's see what you got. AJ Styles versus Cedric Alexander led to nothing. So having it only led to the tag team match at the end. So having a separate match was kind of ridiculous. You could have just had that match and say Cedric Alexander pinned the champion, so he's the number one contender, and you wouldn't have had to worry about your opening match. The problem is you didn't have anybody else. So AJ had to fight twice, right? You would have been fine with just booking the 10-man tag match. Lacey Evans, well, she goes 50-50 with Natty, so I don't know where her career is going. Viking Raiders lose their edge, I think, a little bit, being faces so quick. I could have seen them faces after a good 6-8 month heel run. Lince Dorado and Rey Mysterio, brilliant match. But again, was there ever really any doubt who was going to win it? So then it was just a matter of let's watch these two awesome athletes do what they do best, but we know what the conclusion is going to be, so we'll clap for the individual moves rather than to be excited by, I wonder who's going to win. See, I wish wrestling would get back to that, where we can not only cheer for the great moves that we see, but we can also be left in suspense saying, and I don't even know who's going to win. Both of these guys are doing so great, and this is, look at that great move, and I don't know who's going to win. Instead of, look, folks, you already know who's going to win, but we're going to get some great moves in there so you can chant, this is awesome. I want both. Is that wrong of me to want both as a wrestling fan? I don't necessarily want to know who won is going to win. I don't want it to be a foregone conclusion anyway. It's great if I have an idea. I don't mind having a slight idea who's going to win, but not guaranteed, no question about it. I went into that 10-man tag match saying, somehow, somewhere along the line, Cedric Alexander is going to pin AJ Styles. And if you've been a wrestling fan more than 6 months and you didn't, shame on you. Everybody knew it. Everybody knew. Everybody knew Ray was going to win. So it lessens it, is what I'm trying to say. We should be able to have both a great match and an outcome that we're not quite sure of. And speaking of outcomes we're not quite sure of, again, Bayley and Sasha and Charlotte and Becky put on a great match. They're definitely four of the top women. They're probably the four top women, no doubt about it, in the Federation. Problem is, you can't have an announcer say three times in 5 minutes, Bayley and Sasha are now the toughest force in the WWE. Bayley and Sasha are now the strongest force in the WWE, and then they lose clean. Because that makes either him look like a complete idiot who couldn't analyze anything, or it makes him look like jabrons. Why would you tell an announcer in his ear set, push that, push that, push that, they're losing? Doesn't make any sense to me. So I think while the quality of the matches were high, the quality of the booking was low. And the last thing in the world I really, really needed to see, if the Viking Raiders weren't undermined enough, is being in the ring, yucking it up with Stone Cold Steve Austin and drinking beers, even Braun Strowman. I really wish we didn't see that. You know, when Steve Austin refused to shake Braun Strowman's hand, later on he did, but initially he refused to shake it. They should have just left that alone. And Braun Strowman should have been the guy that when they tossed him the beer, he should have tossed it right back at him and walked out. Let it be a question. Maybe Braun is turning, or maybe that's just Braun. Maybe he's just not a happy guy. Maybe he's just a guy who's a focused, fierce athlete, and he doesn't go in for this. Probably same way with the Viking Raiders. But what I loved is this. At least the Viking Raiders enjoyed their beer. Seth Rollins carefully opens it and takes a sip like he's at a coffee house in Greenwich Village somewhere. And I'm saying to myself, Seth did himself no favors again. Again, Seth gives no favors. You know, here's Steve Austin drinking a beer like a man. Here's the Viking Raiders pouring it all over their face. Here's Braun Strowman gulping a can of it. And here's Seth Rollins saying, I'll take a sip. That's good suds. You saw that, right, Mike? I don't know what to say about that.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that.
Look, even Cedric got it, you know?
Right.
Cedric Alexander got it. You know, he was gulping the beer down as well. So, yeah, the only one that didn't get it was that, and it doesn't help for his character. It doesn't help him. I mean, it makes him look like what people think he is a dick, you know? Because, I mean, even, look, I understand that Goldberg and Austin kind of get along, but when Goldberg was in character, you know, I remember a particular time when Goldberg and Stone Cold, he wanted a match with one of the guys, and he said, "You can do me a favor. The only time when I'm going to drink a beer with you is you're going to give me this match on Raw next week." And Stone Cold goes, "Well, put your drinking shoes on. We're going to drink. And because you and this guy are going to be in a match next week on Raw." And, well, what did Goldberg do? He pops the top, they toast, and he's sitting there gulping the beer down. You know, people get it. And Seth Rollins needs to understand, you know, yeah, at one time you were the guy. You were the guy that was carrying this company on his back. You were that guy. Right now, you're not.
The problem with Seth Rollins is very clear to me, and that is he is a very unsympathetic character. And you can't be that if you're a babyface. Seth Rollins is one of those guys who says, "I'm the greatest wrestler in the world. Nobody can touch me. I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other thing." He acts a little bit, you know, like he's a, what's the right word for it? He acts like a prima donna. And fans don't have the sympathy for him. Now, as a heel, that worked perfectly fine. But you got to be able to adapt and say, "Well, I'm a face, and I got to kind of give the people what they want and get some sympathy for my character." It's very hard to sympathize with a guy who's looking across the ring from Braun Strowman and saying, "I'm the greatest wrestler in the world, and you have no idea. I beat Brock Lesnar. You couldn't do it." There's a better way. I don't think Seth, just by his very nature, is a very good face. And I think he should just go back to being a heel. Or take some lessons from some of these other guys who are faces that are very successful being faces. When AJ Styles was a face, he was very successful at being a face because he played up the, "I know I'm good, but I'm the underdog always." He always seemed to be like that underdog where you say, "This is where AJ loses. This is where AJ loses." And he would always play that up. You always went into an AJ Styles face match saying, "I don't know, man. I don't think he's getting by this guy." That's the genius of a face, to be able to really make you think this is probably where he loses. And then he doesn't. Seth Rollins, it's always, "Well, this, he's going to win. He's going to win. He's going to win." So we'll see. We'll see if Seth can really continue to carry the company. Personally, I don't think that Seth Rollins is going to hold the belt much past the end of October, if he comes out with it at all, which we'll talk about more, obviously, on Sunday. So in ranking the show, really, what you have to do is you have to do the two separate entities. The quality of the matches, the length of the matches, the execution of the matches was an A. No question about it. Everybody seemed to be happy to be in Madison Square Garden. Everybody seemed to have their little extra hype of, "I got to be good," and they were. The booking itself and how it bides to the next couple of weeks after this pay-per-view was very poor. Very poor. We've already seen Bayley and Sasha take a loss. That's something you really didn't want to, I don't think you wanted to see. Or you shouldn't have had the fans see. You should have had to make them wait for that. Bayley just turned heel. There's the fresh Bayley that you have there. You know, come on, let's build them a little bit. Nope. Give the fans an instant, "Oh, they lost. The bad guys took one in the butt. So there, you happy? That girl who was so mean last week, she got her up, you know, comeuppance. No, make us wait for that. Not sure I like the Viking Raiders face. I definitely don't like Lacey Evans doing 50-50s with Natty. I don't know why you're throwing Rey Mysterio in a match that doesn't matter, just to highlight his abilities, I guess, and show us what he can do. Well, guess what? We know what he can do. The Corbin thing was the best thing. I mean, that's because that's a logical win. Truthfully, I would have had, I absolutely 100% would have had him pin Ricochet, because the Ricochet loss wouldn't have meant much. He could have done it off the fact that Joe put him into the coquina clutch or whatever. It wouldn't have meant that much to Ricochet, and you wouldn't have had to have Joe suffer yet another in his long, long, long list. I'm going to compile a list one of these days of the last 4 or 5 months, how many times Joe's dropped. It's astounding. It's astounding. He's a Samoan Curt Hawkins. So that I have to give a D. So we have an A and we have a D. So I'm going to give it I will give it a C plus, because it was nice to see Stone Cold Steve Austin and the matches were pretty solid. But as far as the whole entire show, it averages out to me to be about a C plus, maybe a B minus at best. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a C. It's a flat C for me. And one other thing about, I just want a couple other things. One, again, proving that he's the best wrestler in the sport. The way he sold, AJ sold the lumbar check. He did not get up after it, right after it. And then secondly, that match between Ray and Grand Metalik, it was Grand Metalik.
It was, okay.
Did not look like your typical match where the guys were standing there looking up, waiting for the guy to jump. It actually looked like a fight.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. It actually looked like a contest because they hit the match, the moves with such precision. There was no hesitation. There was no miscommunication. It was precise. Those two guys were definitely precision. I have no problem with that match. My only problem with the booking of the match is everybody knew. Everybody knew where this was going. So while we can say, oh, wonderful move. Oh, look at that move. That was great. Nobody's sitting on the edge of their seat saying, I hope Ray wins. I hope Ray wins. Everybody's sitting back saying, I wonder how Ray's going to win. What move is he going to use? Oh, we know. We already know. The 619, the frog splash. That's right. That's what he always does. Wouldn't it have been nice if he didn't win with that? Wouldn't it have been nice if we got a surprise? And you say, oh, he never got a chance to use that move. He had to hit something else with this guy because this guy's really taking him to the limit. No, it's so fundamental. Everything is A, B, C, black and white. I think they could do better than that. Todd, what's your overall rating this week?
I got to go with Mike there, a C.
Okay, so we got two Cs, and I got a C, I guess, C plus, I guess, really. Because some of the matches were great. It was nice to see him back in Madison Square Garden. The last thing we want to talk about before we end this, of course, we'll be back on Friday with the SmackDown report and Sunday with the big Clash of Champions pre-show. Apparently, and we don't know as of this moment whether it's a work or not, but apparently Matt Riddle took to Twitter. I think it's been deleted now, but basically he said, look, nobody wants to give me a ride in because everybody's car is so filled with quote unquote top talent. No, he's basically indicating that people don't like him backstage in NXT. Tommaso Ciampa answered it and said, look, the boys will take care of, the boys will police themselves. Until then, you need to basically shut up. Now, I don't know if this is just rhetoric leading to Riddle and Tommaso Ciampa. Could be. I mean, they could be taken to social media to try to fool us, but something about the way Matt Riddle operates, I don't like. Number one, I think he's highly overrated. Of course he's a good athlete. And of course he has some legit cred as a MMA fighter and everything. But that doesn't mean you're the great, great, great professional wrestler. And truthfully, I think he's good. But I think he's a guy who's good who thinks he's great. And he's owed something. He's not owed anything. That's why when I say, and I know people's opinions vary. Some people think the greatest wrestler of all times, you know, Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage or Stone Cold Steve Austin or whoever. I think I always said it was Shawn Michaels. AJ Styles is close. But the reason is you never hear AJ Styles tweeting stupid things. You never hear when AJ Styles' time to lose, it isn't, well, there's going to be a caveat. I'm struck by lightning, and then a rhinoceros runs me over, and then 17 guys who I've pissed off jump me, and they beat me with shovels and sticks, and then the guy gives me 17 of his finishing maneuvers, and I get my foot on the ropes, but the referee didn't see it. If you want to do all those things, then I'll agree to lose. No, AJ just loses and makes the other guy look good in losing. And when he does that, what happens, ladies and gentlemen? We say to ourselves, well, I guess he could lose on Sunday. It's possible. I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't know 100% for sure. AJ has dropped to Cedric Alexander. AJ did take the stunner and make it look like he was dead. AJ has dropped to a lot of people. And he does so not only willingly, but making them look good. In other words, he doesn't say, well, I'll drop, but I got to look strong coming out of it. No, it's just like, okay, this is my turn to lose. Let me make this other guy look as good as I can. And I expect the same in return when it's his turn. That's old school pro wrestling. Nowadays, that scenario I just gave you, I got to lose. Well, can't I have 14 guys jump me and one guy run me over with a car and a manager interference and the referee doesn't see my foot on the ropes? Can I do that? No. I got a feeling Matt Riddle's one of those guys. So here's a suggestion, Matt. I agree with you that Goldberg's not a very good wrestler. I agree with you that Goldberg embarrassed himself in Saudi Arabia. When you draw the people that Goldberg draws, then you criticize him. Until then, he still drew way more than you. And you should at least have the respect to say, it's not my cup of tea. I don't think he represents the best athleticism in professional wrestling. But to take to Twitter to say he's a lousy wrestler and he's an embarrassment to the sport, you going to say that about Hulk Hogan? Because I got news for you. Hogan ain't much better. Never was much better. What'd Hogan do? Punches to the head, kick to the stomach, body slam and a leg drop? But you wouldn't dare say it about Hulk Hogan, would you? Or maybe you would. I don't know. This is the arrogance of a younger generation of wrestlers who don't even know what they don't know. They just think, well, I'm the king shit here. I can do a corkscrew, plancha. I can do a suicide dive. I'm the king of the world. And they don't even realize that there are guys who got the same reaction you're getting doing an arm lock because they did it right. And those, in my opinion, are the true professional wrestlers. And the guys who take to Twitter to say, I'm better than you, are usually the most insecure.
Right. And so you don't see, we don't care too much for Lesnar, but you don't see him on Twitter, you know,
nope,
yucking it up or saying I'm the best, even though we don't care too much for him. And he's another one of these guys that said, look, I'm not fighting. He flat out said, I'm not fighting gender, you know. I'm not going to fight him and have possibly drop to him and have to sell to him. And we got on him for that. But at least with Brock Lesnar, he somewhat understands things. And you wouldn't say that about – he wouldn't be saying this about Brock Lesnar because he knows that Brock Lesnar is a better draw than him, just like Goldberg is.
Right. Look, we don't need a bunch of guys who, by virtue of the fact that their whole life they've been told what great athletes they are and how wonderful they are in the ring, thinking they rule wrestling, not even knowing the basic fundamentals of ring psychology, and not even knowing, having enough class to say, look, there are several different styles of wrestler. Not everyone is supposed to be cut out of the same jib. So let's face it. These are guys who, these are the people who are going to talk themselves out of a job, much like Bobby Lashley's former manager did. Keep talking. That's all I got to say. Keep talking. Because at the end of the day, there are a lot of guys who have respect for anyone who stepped into that ring and drew and really was able to bring in a crowd and entertain a crowd. If you're not one of those guys because they can't do certain moves that you can do, I think you'd have a hard time in the dressing room. I really do. And as soon as you go up to the big show, maybe in NXT, people are afraid to rock the boat. They're not afraid to rock the boat in WWE. You go up to WWE with that attitude, you're going to get put right back down to earth quick, really quick. And if you think, well, I'm an MMA fighter, nobody's going to touch me, just remember that Chris Jericho is going to come to blows with Brock Lesnar over what he thought was a disrespect to another guy, not even him. So I think Matt Riddle needs to calm down a little bit, especially considering he's a face. He's coming off very arrogant. He's just another Seth Rollins type guy, and you know, the fans ain't going to dig it. I'm telling you, it's not going to work. These guys need to understand when and where to puff and when to just shut up. Anyway, folks, Raw was, it was what it was. For Madison Square Garden show, I thought it was excellent wrestling. I thought we got to see some great matches, and I thought we got to see the return of Stone Cold Steve Austin at his best, really. Looking great, as Todd had mentioned. I do think that the WWE has a real problem when it comes to their writing and their booking, and they really need to resolve this, and they need to resolve it fast. Because no amount of ability, no amount of athleticism, and even name stars cannot overcome horrible, ridiculous, terrible writing. Vince has said he's addressed the issues. I didn't see those issues particularly get better last night, and we'll see what happens tonight. Anyway, we'll see you on Friday with the SmackDown report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.